welcome to another edition of Living an Ultra Life. This week, we are gathered with the two race directors of one of the most diabolical and difficult races ever created in the history of mankind, Mr. James Huller and Mr. Josh Fosberg, who we have to call Mr. now because they're both retired jarheads. Guys, you ready to go for a little run?
Let's do it.
I'm ready.
All right. All right, well, gentlemen, 2026 Swami Shuffle 200 presented a whole new experience. What did you guys think when you were setting us out on the task, trying to do the beginner's photo at the start of the race? What was going through your head? Josh, you go first.
Oh, I actually looked right at James, and I said, honestly, bro, if I was running this thing and this was the start, I'd probably be going back to the runner's house right now.
I agree, dude. I would have started about 12 hours later. That is the toughest weather we've had for this race yet. But it's amazing. Yeah. I love it. I'm glad it was.
Well, just the start. I mean, we've had some weather in races, but daggone, that start had to have taken the cake for worst start of any race you guys have run, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there was one year we had some sleet at the beginning of the race, but it wasn't near as windy, near as harsh, near as cold as it was when you guys set off.
Right. Yeah, the beach was kind of fun too. There was very little of it.
Yeah. So a little funny side caveat to that, like when you guys took off, then obviously Josh and I meet you with the blue carpet, get you on a beach. Then we come back and we had one runner starting late, so we got her started. We went to go change the leave. And, of course, I'm soaking wet like everybody else was. And Josh had just taken off, and I'm changing clothes. And I grabbed a new pair of shoes because I had two pairs of shoes in the truck. So the first pair I grabbed was soaking wet. The second pair I grabbed, I didn't notice they were wet until I put them on. So I put on dry clothes, dry socks. I put them shoes on, and they were soaking wet when I put them on. And I started cussing. I was upset. I was inside out. This is bull crap. Blah, blah, blah. And about halfway through that sentence, it clicked in my mind that I'm fixing to be sitting in the truck for 2.5 to 3 hours with the heater on, having a good time while all of y'all are wearing a set of shoes that you're going to wear for the next 8 days. And so I was like, man, stop your belly aching, you little bitch. But it was so funny that I went through that with my shoes and then I realized, hey, wait, this is going to be easy for me, but rough for y'all. But that is unquestioned the hardest, probably the roughest weather we've had over the duration.
Yeah, I mean, the cold, I don't know that it's gotten that cold at night before. Have you guys had it be that cold and windy at night before?
I don't think so. I mean, what do we have, 20s with wind chill?
Yeah, the wind chill that first night got down into right around 11 when we were pulling into the Hilton Garden Inn.
And some of the runners said they had snow on the beach when they were running. They were running in snow, so...
Yeah, yeah,
you mentioned a tide. You would mention a tide too. The tide, because we always meet you guys out on the beach, and we always run basically the high tide line. I can drive my truck the whole way up there. But once you get up to that Corova area, there's a house that we always, in the past, have been between the house and the water to drive past. When we got up there this time, we could not do that. It was impossible for me to drive between that house and the water because the water was up under the house. So we had to go behind it for the first time. That I'll tell you, that's probably the highest, that's not probably it. It absolutely is the highest tide that we've had on the beach ever.
Yeah. But I think the storm,
but Josh made a special call for you guys and he had a protein snack for you the entire time along that beach. All the fish and the birds.
I know, man, that was crazy. I've been looking up to see if anybody has, like, they're doing an investigation now to figure out why all the dead fish on the beach, but holy smokes, it was full.
Oh yeah. There's thousands of fish.
Yeah. It was crazy. So at one point, Peter, Danny and I were actually, there was no beach. And so they're like, what do we do? And I was like, well, our option is we're going to be in ankle to knee deep water. For Danny, that would be hip deep water. But I said, I think we're going up on the dunes, dude. And they looked at me, they're like, the sand's deep. I was like, sand or water, your pick.
Yeah.
So that was crazy. How fast did Justin and the lead pack make it off the beach? Because we have no clue, but they were zooming.
Well, Justin actually, I'm not even sure if he was the first one off the beach.
I don't think he was. Yeah.
But once he came off the beach, that's when he started separating himself pretty quickly. Because when we passed him on the beach, there was at least one, if not two people ahead of him.
Okay.
And then the next time we saw him, it was a good couple miles between him and the next person on the road.
Yeah. Did he pick up his first pacer off of the beach or what?
Probably
I know he
that little
had
parking
one of
lot.
the girls waiting in the parking lot to pick him up, so that would have been his first pacer then.
Yeah.
But he straight up said he never ran a single step of that race alone. The pacers he had, he's running with everybody else on the beach, and then once he got off the beach, the pacers he had, they just rotated out the whole time. One would run however far, and then they would just swap out. So
Yeah.
I'm sure that helped in that first night because he ran pretty deep into the night, and I don't know that I could have kept myself out there pushing with as
They're
cold and
just,
windy as it was.
yeah, he made the turnaround in 25 hours.
Wow.
He was at the lighthouse at the 9 o'clock in the morning.
Holy
In fact,
crap.
he made it to the lighthouse before Josh and I did.
Really?
We
That's crazy.
didn't we had lost track of how far he was, and when we were trying to do our math, we're like, okay, we're good. And we're sitting eating breakfast, and Josh's like, holy shit, he's there. Like, he's almost there. We gotta go. So we
Wow.
jumped up, dude. We ran probably 150 mile an hour. I mean, I'm gonna say that's what Sarah drove because she caught up to me.
Wow.
We hightailed down there. He was already at the place when we got there, so we missed his arrival, but we caught him before he left. Yeah, he flew, dude. I mean, that's 110 miles in 25 hours in that
110
weather and that
miles
condition.
in
Yeah.
25 hours. That's
Yeah.
man, that's crushing it. So that was faster than Thomas did last year, right?
I don't remember.
Think
I think
so.
it's pretty close because it was a similar situation. It was right around the check-in time, the morning check-in time when Thomas hit it, I
Yeah.
believe as well.
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't know how much more Justin slowed down, but I mean there's like a 4 hour difference in speed over the entire course. But
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think Thomas was like 52, 40 something, and Justin was
53.
right at
Yeah.
57, right?
Thomas is 53.01
Okay.
and Justin had 57.06.
Okay, so right at 4 hours. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, was what he had planned for actually. He
Right.
when he was
Yeah.
at when he was at the lighthouse, he said that they were just ahead of their plan, and he contributed that to the wind at his back pushing him through the night. And then when he was leaving there, he said his plan from there was 58. So
Okay.
he
Yeah.
executed it pretty close to what he had as far as his overall pace and time throughout the
Yeah.
course. He stayed pretty true to it.
So how far were Tyler and Lisa behind him at the turnaround?
I think the next one after him was, I want to say, maybe 3 or 4 hours.
Okay.
And then the next one after that was, another 3 or 4 hours. So once we saw them, it was like, all right, we'll wait for the next one. Okay, we'll wait for the next one. And then it was going to be a long time before we saw anybody after that. So.
Yeah, because I mean, the next ones after that were probably the pack with Walter and Michelle and Leanne and them, right?
Yeah, they got
Yeah.
there that night.
Wow. So then, looking at the race and everything, who was your biggest surprise, kind of looking at their performance this race?
I would say the one that I think I was the most surprised about was probably, well, Jamila definitely surprised me the most.
Yeah, Jamina surprised the hell out of me because I mean she's got a lot of strong finishes. Right.
So probably the biggest surprise. But after that, I think it was Stephen Dents because when I saw him, I didn't think he looked too bad. And then the next time we talked, he was talking about maybe not finishing, which she ended up making that decision shortly after that. So
Yeah, Stephen.
I think that's probably the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah, Dave
Maybe,
Moore getting to the bridge. That had to been a little bit of a shocker.
David Solomon. I didn't expect, but it makes more sense. I mean, he's a beast and going.
He is.
So, and even him, he was actually moving well by the time he went ahead and pulled. But that first day really pushed him back, and then he struggled the second day to try to make up some of that time. But that first day, he just – it slowed him down, and it hurt him so much that by the time he picked it up on the third day, I talked to him, you know, halfway through the day, and he'd knocked out, I think, 20 miles that day already. I think it was just the amount behind his plan that those first 2 days pushed him. He got to the point where it was irrecoverable.
Did anybody who stopped at the Hampton Inn the first night finish?
No.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought, because I was like, that puts you in such a deficit, because, I mean, only going 32 the first day, man, now you've got a pile on the miles.
Very rarely do we see anybody stop there
that
first night. And I think it was just the brutalness of that first day got a lot of people to kind of pull up early, or just they didn't pull up any earlier than they normally did. They just didn't make it as far.
And
I think the people who were put in that position were hurting more that second day than they expected to.
And I think you can attribute part of that to just the brutalness of the weather, how cold the rain, the wind. So you've got to work harder to make the miles. You got to work harder to stay warm. And as you know, as you're working harder, you're burning more calories. The more calories you burn, the more you got to take in. And it's hard to get them things in when you're doing it. So I think part of it, just the weather and then the mind, how it plays with your mind when you're doing that. And you keep telling yourself this sucks, instead of saying, flip the switch, and man, this is amazing.
Yeah.
That finally you get to that point, you got to take that break, and you take it earlier than what you normally would. And it does, it puts you in a hole, man. It's a deficit you can't dig out of.
Yeah. That was kind of my feeling, because, you know, I was shooting for a Wednesday finish. And when my body went numb and I wasn't feeling anything at Hilton Garden Inn, and I was like, you know, for health's sake, I'm not young anymore. I better stop here with Peter and Danny, because they had already planned on stopping there. But I was like, I'll continue on to the Comfort Inn. There was no way I was going to make another 15 miles. That was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our Ramada had a nice hot tub.
Yeah, I did.
Dude, the only thing I could do when I got to the hotel room, I sort of remember ordering food and I sort of remember eating it. But I don't remember anything after that except trying to get my body to regulate. I would go from total hot sweats to just shivering with cold. And I was like, okay, I got to get my body to regulate so I can move the next morning. And it finally settled down probably about 2 a.m. and I got a couple hours sleep. But yeah, that first day was a tough one. You know, I will say I've never stuck with runners before. I've always kind of done this on my own. I had the most fun this time, you know, just hanging out with the runners and always knowing that, you know, there was when there was a low, there was always somebody there to pick you up.
Yep.
Have you guys ever noticed that before?
Oh yeah, they don't throw the party in the back for no reason. So
I noticed that for 317 miles running from Beaufort to North Carolina with Josh, because I was always in the low and he was always picking me up.
Yeah, yep. It was a real cool dynamic. I've never had that before in a Swami, so it made this one really special. Totally different, totally different, and really enjoyable. I, you know, the pain was intense, but yeah, whatever.
Pain normally goes away.
Yes, it does. It does. So as the race progressed and everything, did you expect what we end up with, 9 drops?
Yes, sir.
That's a big number, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. But we also had the most starters that we've ever had.
Okay.
So as the starters increase, the runs, the drops increase, and then I'll go back to the weather, man. I think the weather affected that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we had the majority of those were the end of the first 24 hours, you know, after that first night. I think we had, 5 or 6, which is what we typically will see through the whole race.
Right.
We had that on the first day, basically. And so the ones that we got after that were the ones we normally would have got. Yeah, I think that first day it was brutal.
Yeah, nothing quite like that. So we'll just have to hope future years maybe we have better weather. I want to run. Can you guys make the weather nice for one of the years that I run?
No.
Oh.
Nope. Nope.
All right. I thought one of you had some power, you know.
Well, we did order the extra weather this year, so
okay,
we had one good weather a year. The rest of them, I mean, actually they've all been good except this year. They've been decent for the most
part. Even last year there was snow on the ground when we started, but it was from the storm the week before.
Right.
The weather that week was actually pretty decent last year.
It was beautiful last week. I wish I hadn't gotten sick the day before the race. All right, so fundraising, how did it end up going?
So fundraising, we did in the neighborhood of 12,000. I don't have the final numbers yet. We're not done, but we did about 12,000. We did about three and a half the week of the race.
Okay.
We'd like a little bit more, but I mean, it's good.
There you go. Well, you know, I really loved the cards. We had a lot of people scan the cards. I actually gave mine to the Food Lion manager. He wanted to pass it around to staff and see if they would donate. So that was kind of cool in Avon. So that was a good addition. I thought that was very, very, very good addition.
And we've got extra cards.
I think that was something
we
talked about the last time on here, was getting something like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that was a reminder for me and James to pull it together and make sure we got that, because I think I end up ordering those the week after that conversation.
Yep. And the air tags.
You want more than just one. I mean, we can give you more cards. We got plenty.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably next year, you know, give out three or four cards and let people give them out. Because, I mean, that was a really, really good idea. And I think that will definitely help with fundraising.
Yeah, we gave out quite a few this year. I mean, we gave everybody one, but said, if you want more, take more. And several people took several. So,
yep.
But I think we had 500 or something with us if we needed them.
Good. So we got some for next year's race.
So yes,
AirTag, who came up with that? That was actually a pretty good idea. And how did it work?
We've been talking about it for a couple years, because inevitably there's always a couple people. When I'm working on the update, and then both in the morning and evening when we're trying to just validate that we have accountability, everybody, and everybody's, you know, alive. Each of those times, one or two or three people that we're trying to track down who fell asleep or just lost track of time or whatever, and we don't know where they are. So we're driving up and down the course and we're asking, hey, have you seen this person? Have you seen this person? To try to get a idea where they're at. And so the goal for the AirTag was to eliminate that if we didn't get a check and we still knew where they were. And for the most part, it worked. There's some places where it's not very helpful, like on the beach.
Yeah.
When people are coming back, it doesn't help us too much because they have to ping off of something. You know, they need an Apple device, you know, an iPad or a phone or something to ping off to get a location. So when somebody's on the beach doing that long 20-mile stretch where there's nothing but beach, we don't get too many pings on there. So usually once people get on the beach, we lose them. But we at least know they're on the beach.
Yep.
So it wasn't a perfect solution, but it was definitely better than not having them.
Yep. So how did the Back Bay rule come into effect this year? What did you guys see?
We saw a lot of people stop earlier than we would have thought. So like, I remember at least two different times somebody said, hey, I'm not sure I can make it off the beach in time, so I'm going to stop. And it was still, you know, morning of that day.
Yeah.
And they were just not sure they could beat the sunset. So I know there was at least two people who do that. They waited a day or the better part of a day in order to make sure they could abide by that rule.
Yeah. I know Eric and Joel were two of those, and they both talking with, you know, those of us in that backpack, the pack that I was calling the triage pack, they were just concerned with how much they had slowed down and slowing down. Is it? Well, I don't know what the proper English is. James, you tell me what the proper English is. But so they stopped because they just knew that how slow they were going. They were doing the math and they were like, the math isn't working. And so that's why both of those guys stopped. I'm not sure why Caitlin stopped, because she seemed to be hauling pretty well.
Just her body shut down. She was done.
Okay.
She told us she just got to the end of the rope.
But I was trying to talk her into going off with us at midnight, and she at first she was going to. I thought I had talked her into it, and then she texted me like 11 o'clock at night. She said, "I just can't.
Just
I need
on
more
there.
rest."
I'll tell you, you're talking about the math, and one of the funniest things we got was last year, and I don't remember which runner it was, but one of the runners sent us a picture of a piece of paper. He was sitting in his hotel room, and he drew a picture of the high tide, the low tide, the moon, all these things, and all these numbers. Remember that, Josh?
Nick. I don't remember who that was.
That was Nick.
And he's like, so
It
here's
was,
my,
yeah, it
this
was
time, here's what
Nick.
I'm going to do. Dude, that picture is damn hilarious.
Yeah,
Because you talk about
Nick
like the
is right.
runner's math and trying to figure it out, dude. That was
I was
crazy.
trying to, I was looking at, because you sent me the picture of that, and I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I'm looking at, man. And I'm pretty good at math. So that
Yeah, it was
was
pretty
funny.
wild, but yeah, just figuring out that math of when to stop, how to meet that time limit is good.
Yep. So, what was your favorite finish, Josh? I mean, James had to take off family stuff and everything. What was your favorite finish?
Oh,
The
favorite
last one because they could go home.
I mean, that was pretty cool to see, that big group of what was it? Ended up being
Seven.
seven, I think.
Yep.
Seven people rolling in at the same time. That was pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know that I have a favorite.
They're all pretty awesome, aren't they?
Yeah.
So 16 finishers, is that the most finishers we've had?
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty awesome. All right, so let's
Wait a
start
minute. Wait a minute.
pointing.
No, I lied. 17 last year,
Okay.
if I'm
All
looking
right.
at this number right.
So 17 last year was the most, 16 this year. That it was a great, I mean, I know there were nine drops, but 16 finishers with the weather this year, I think that was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. But you know what? The biggest surprise, we're all looking at the weather, Thursday evening when we're getting in, and we're planning on going off at midnight. Do you know what the weather report was, but what the weather was supposed to be like on Friday?
I don't even pay attention to it. I don't care.
Originally, it was going to be raining hard Friday.
Raining hard Friday with the wind straight out of the north. Did you know that that was the calmest the wind was all week, was on Friday? There was
Yeah,
virtually no wind at all. It was crazy.
I think most of that pushed ahead, and the guys that were trying to come in on Thursday got that.
So that was a lot of fun. So let's look at next year. So next year we actually start on February 28th, which is the day that we remember for Swami, right?
That's correct. That's the day that he took his life.
Okay. And
It's also a day that the race started. The first year was on, we started on the 28th also.
Wow, is this going to be the second time that we start on the 28th then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And another weird side thing was that year we started on the 28th. The next year, we had a lady show up at the race whose son took his life on the day we started the race.
No way.
We almost missed the start because of it. Chat with
Wow.
her. But yeah.
Wow. That's this race is special, man. Mike Edwards and I were talking at one point, and we're going, all right, are we gonna run this thing again? And I was in so much pain that day. That was coming back from, the turnaround and everything, and that was when my shin just blew up on me. And I was in so much pain. I was like, I am retiring. I'm never running this thing again. And Mike Edwards is like, yeah, we'll see come March 30th. And I think we both unretired already, so
Yeah,
but
speaking of Mike Edwards, I mean, he got his fifth finish this year.
yes, wasn't that cool?
That's amazing. That's awesome. And then we've got six of y'all. You're one of the six that are looking at your number four this year.
Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah.
Gotta come back and get five now. I mean,
Gotta do it, bro.
So it definitely be signing up again. Jenny's like, I am never doing this ever again. You are crazy. Yeah. I think this year was the hardest on spouses and support crew this year, because that weather the first day, I had a lot of alarming texts going out to runners. Are you still alive? Can I hear from you? And because our fingers were so frozen, I don't think there was a whole lot of texting going on. That was one of the reasons I had to check in late, is I couldn't I could not grasp my phone because my fingers were so frozen. I was
Yeah,
like, well, they'll forgive me.
that was one of the things with the tags this year. A lot of people were putting their phones in their bags and shutting them off.
Yep.
So if, obviously, if your phone shut off, it's like a ping. So that was part of the problem early on in the race. Later in the race, they did a little better, but yeah.
All right, so we're going to open up sign up on midnight, March 31st again.
April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day,
1
because
April.
we're a bunch of fools. How fast do you think it'll sell out this year?
Less than 48 hours?
What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think we sold out this year in, I think, a day and a half. So, and we've already had several people reaching out who've never run it, asking when signups are going to be. So, I would imagine if we don't sell out in the first 24, I don't see it making to 48.
I can't see it making to 48. If it makes it to 24, I'll actually be surprised. Number of people that I've heard that want to sign up for it.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of people reach out already asking when it starts. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, my money's on less than 48 if I had to make a bet.
I'm gonna say in the middle of E2, so I'll say 36.
All right. There you go. All right. So let's refocus on why we run this race. What is being done with the money that gets raised? And can you guys share with us any stories of people that have been helped?
Yeah, so the money being raised, 50% of everything we raise goes to Mission 22. Cut that check. I'll cut that check next week. I kind of give it 2 to 3 weeks to a month after the race before I cut that check to them. It's a nationwide organization that's doing amazing things for our veterans. You know, Josh and I have talked about them a lot. We looked at a lot of different places, but they seem to be the best people that we like who put the money where their mouth is. The second half of it, we go back to. We try to find grassroots organizations and or veterans that need assistance that we can provide a little bit of financial help to. We sponsored recently 2 disabled veterans who were in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We've helped a veteran who was in a motorcycle accident, his house refitted, you know, taking care of, you know, things around the house to get him back on his feet, you know, getting gym memberships, sponsoring training, different things. Because our veterans, they don't want to talk about it. They just want to do things. And if you can get them around like people, so it's just kind of helping out with those types of things. So the money goes back to, again, Mission 22, who provides a ton of different things for us, as well as in those grassroots organizations that can reach out to those individuals closer to home.
Yeah. One of the cool stories from this year's race is, you know, I told you guys being able to run it with a group of guys was just simply amazing. And I know at one point I was thinking about Josh and how Josh has just recently separated from the military. I will tell you guys, hands down, Peter Way did the most phenomenal job of making sure that everybody he possibly could made it across the finish line. Cajoled and encouraged and had the right word at the right time for more runners that made it across the finish line. I mean, he did a phenomenal job. But one of the things that drove home to us, and we were talking about this on the beach last day, because Steve and I are both veterans. Obviously, Danny is still in the military. And we were talking about how important it is to be around people. And when you're trying to punch things out like this thing all by yourself, it makes it 9 million times harder. And so we got to thinking about the veterans, and it made all of us go, look, we've got to do more to raise money to get more into the hands of people who are actually helping our veterans. It really helped me kind of accentuate why. And Josh, I brought you up for a reason. You know, you're on my heart and mind because you have separated, and I know you still got a band and everything, but dude, I'm so proud of you for what you're doing after your separation and still maintaining the level of commitment to this race that you are. I'm really, really proud of you, Josh.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm definitely, you know, seeing all those struggles that everybody goes through when they first get out, and it's an adventure for sure. Luckily, I've spent enough time doing this and other things for the suicide prevention. I kind of, you know, saw what people were dealing with and the problem they were having, so I made sure that I was linked up with people and had those, you know, connections already in place by the time I got out that would continue after I left military service. But
that's the other thing me and James actually are working on right now is they just took some guys out on a fishing trip. And we're actually starting up a monthly veterans, like just a veterans hangout, you know, play mini golf, go bowling, go shoot ski, you know, different stuff like that, where, you know, it's going to create the opportunity to have that camaraderie without making it about suicide. So people don't have to ask for help. They can just come bowl or play mini golf or
be themselves, whatever we're human doing. Beings, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, the awareness and action will cover the cost of that bill while they come just enjoy the camaraderie.
Good. Well, guys, we, all of us that have the privilege and the honor to run this race, we thank you for all of your hard work. And guys, I know there's a lot of stuff that goes into running this race that nobody will ever see, but your hard work and your dedication to it do not go unnoticed. So thank you so, so much.
Yeah, I appreciate hearing that, Mike. But I'll tell you that we couldn't put this race on without you. If it wasn't for the runners, it would be me and him standing at the start line alone. So, you know, I thank the runners that are running, putting the cost and the effort, the training, all that stuff, because it's not cheap. I mean, the cost of the race is easy, but all the other outside stuff that you're doing to support our veterans, he and I could do it, but if nobody showed up, we'd be there staring at each other. And he's not that pretty to look at. I don't want to look too long.
He's gotten uglier too. That beard, man. I don't know.
thank you all we thank you all the participants, the supporters, the guys that are out there actually putting in the work, you know, setting it up and doing it. There's work involved, but it's not that bad. You guys are supporting a cause that we love and helping us out and putting in that effort out there. That makes it all worthwhile. It's good.
Yeah, and awesome. And just to throw them out there, Pat and Amy with Sandridge Live, they do a lot of the legwork for the race before we get there, because they're there in Sandridge. So the runner's house and all that stuff, that's all stuff that they set up and coordinate and just give us the information. So there's very little pull on our end for any of those things there in Sandridge. Most of that stuff's all taken care of by Pat and Amy there at Sandridge Life. And, you know, they make sure that all that's ready for you guys. So
yeah, they're awesome. And we can't forget the unsung hero that, you know, is the glue behind all this, Sherry.
Yeah.
Mama!
You know, one of the highlights of every race is to hear that horn honk and, you know, the window roll down and there's Sherry just smiling, you know, giving you encouraging words, offering your candy or whatever she's got in the vehicle, man. It's that's like the highlight of every race is that Sherry moment, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel that. She that's what she's out there for. She's out there just to chase the runners down and make sure they're all good. That's the nurse in her coming out.
There you go.
There more often if Josh and I didn't let go of her. Like, she always wants to be on that course, 100%.
That's awesome. All right, guys. Well, you know how we like to end the Living an Ultra Life podcast. So what is the meaning starting to mean something different as we go on living an ultra life, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going through a dramatic life change right now, so everything means a little bit different to me, but I think it's perseverance and endurance is really what it means.
Yep. James?
No, I agree with Josh, man. I mean, it's about just keeping at it, bro. Stay at it. You know, motion is lotion, movement is medicine. Live that ultra life, man. Ultra being awesome. Big, bold, golden. Just go for it.
It's good stuff. All right, guys, that'll do it for this week's episode of Living an Ultra Life. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.